Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. This is Bonnie Kay for the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my co-hostess Misty Hall and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. So good evening, Misty. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Good evening to you. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are things in hot Florida?
Well, it wasn't so hot today, so we had a nice breeze. Today was my dad's birthday, so I was with my parents today celebrating that, and we were able to sit outside on the balcony of their home and have a wonderful dinner, and the breeze was nice. It was not hot, and the bugs were not biting, so that's rare for Florida. So it was a wonderful day, perfect day for a birthday.
Yeah, well, don't plan on it staying that way.
You are correct. I'm going to enjoy it while it lasts, my dear.
Yeah, it may be fall up here on the east, but it's still summer down there.
Are the leaves changing?
Yeah, they are. They're really beautiful.
Oh, I miss that. I love the four seasons. I miss that. I really do.
Well, tonight we have a very special guest who's returning to us, and we had her on our show a few months ago, and it was just so wonderful having Suzette. And Suzette is a writer, and she's also involved in our network. And she has a blog called 50 Times the Writer, Suzette Unleashed. And I'm going to bring Suzette on with us because she just has some really wonderful outlooks on life that will help many women. So let's see. Suzette, is that you?
Yes, that's me.
Hi, Suzette. How are you?
Hi, Bonnie. I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm doing really well, even though I'm a lot older than the last time when we talked.
Goodness.
Since that time, I turned 60, so, you know. You're lucky I remember your name, Suzette. Well, I am remembering it. Of course, I have it in front of my eyes in case I think to forget it. You know, they tell me once you hit 60, it's all downhill from there, so I'm trying to keep little notes. But how are you doing?
I am doing fabulous. I've been excited about returning to the radio show.
Yes, and we're very excited to have you, because you and I have been in touch for a number of years now. And
yes.
You've gone through your own experience with the whole gay issue, correct?
Oh, correct.
And you survived it.
Yes, yes, yes. Thank God.
And you grew stronger in spite of it, correct?
Oh, indeed, yes. Indeed, yes.
And I told some of our listeners that, you know, to be excited because you were going to come on tonight and tell us that life can move forward. So I just want to let people know that if you'd like to have any comments or talk to us while Suzette is with us, I want to give you our guest call-in number. It's area code 646-716-4893. I'll repeat that one more time. Area code 646-716-4893. And Suzette, what I like about you is even though I've gotten older, you're no youngster yourself, right?
I'm no spring chicken. 51 will be 52 in December.
There you go. And living life at its fullest anyway, right?
Yes. I don't feel like that at all. If I didn't see it on my birth certificate, I wouldn't believe it.
Give it another 8 years, you will. But wait till you have to line up those doctor's appointments when you're 60. But no, that's absolutely true. Age is just a number, and it's all of what you make of it. But maybe can you tell our listeners a little bit about your situation with the gay experience?
Sure, I'll try to give you the Cliff Note version because the show is not long enough.
Okay.
probably like a lot of listeners, I kind of grew up in a very rigid environment, a very safe environment. We called it a Christian environment, but in hindsight, it was a very dysfunctional environment with a Christian theme to it. But I was very naive. My mom and dad were married until my father died at 72. So it wasn't that I didn't have a dad in the home or anything like that. But he was present, but he did not teach us about love and about men. The only thing that we were told was keep your dress down and your legs closed. Or all men, you know, you couldn't be friends with a man because all men wanted sex. And that was it. That was basically it. And also, my father was very, I loved him dearly, but he was a binge drinker. So if he wasn't drinking, I kind of think he was fatigued those times when he wasn't drinking. And during those times, he would be in the church, and he would be very, very puritanistic in his views. So all things feminine, all things, you know, they were misunderstood, likened to Jezebel or Delilah, you know, just being a girl, just being feminine. So, you know, to me that was a perfect backdrop. People say, you know, why did I marry a gay man? I'm thinking, you know, why not, given, you know, the background that I came up in. Sex was taboo, and I wasn't taught. My femininity was not welcomed as I got older. So I think it kind of made me very much so one that would probably be naive in marrying a man that was gay. What made him appeal to me was I was pretty much afraid of men because of what I've been taught, and he was somebody that I could talk to. He wasn't trying to get me in bed. He wasn't trying to run games. You know, I was like, gosh, I can talk to this guy. He's interested in more than my body. You know, he's interested in my mind. And he's a Christian man, and he wants to live right, too. And, you know, so that was a plug, you know. So needless to say, the long or I should say the short of it is.
Did your family like me? Was that?
They did.
Mm-hmm.
My dad liked him. I mean, I have two other sisters, and he told me, he whispered to me as I was walking down the aisle getting married, that this was the first wedding that he was happy about.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't think he really picked up on my ex-husband's being gay, or if he did, for whatever reason, it did not carry the weight that I would imagine that it should have. I think it was more important to my parents that he be, quote-unquote, saved or be a Christian, you know, believe like we believe. And I don't think they really thought in terms of gay or anything like
that. And I'm sure that, you know, he was probably a respectable man. And
I think
maybe part of you was happy to please your father, would you say?
I would say that I think he was churchy. He was familiar.
Mm-hmm.
He was familiar. I don't think they knew him well enough to know whether he was good or bad. I think he was a person in the church, and that automatically kind of qualified him.
Right. Would you say you were in love with him, though?
In hindsight, no. I was in need with him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was more of a, and I've come to the conclusion, need can feel like love, but it comes from a different place.
I think that's a really excellent saying that a lot of women need to listen to. You're in need with him and not in love with him.
Yes.
I think that really kind of sums it up for a lot of women. You know, when you think that you need to get married and hear somebody.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm, we see a lot of that.
Protect you, prefer you. You need someone to validate you.
Mm-hmm. Did you date much before you met him?
Oh, girl, dating? No. Dating consisted of a guy would come calling, and he'd have to sit in the living room, and we'd have to have a sofa cushion or pillow between us. And during the time he would come calling, my dad or mom would kind of breeze through the living room kind of casually, and if they thought we were sitting too close or whatever, they would clear their throats. And they would walk back in the other room. And then when it was time for him to leave, they would yell, Suzette, it's time for your company to leave.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. There was no dating.
you think in a way you got married to leave your home?
So what now?
You think in a way one of the reasons you wanted to get married was to get out of your house?
I don't think that was it so much. My older sister, that was true for her. Mine was more so I was the middle child, and, you know, I've read a lot about the middle child syndrome, and I think I was the poster child for that. I felt invisible. I felt invisible. I felt overlooked. I felt emotionally neglected. And back in that day, my parents sat us as little kids. My mom would sit us in front of the TV, and all we saw every day was soap operas. And then on weekends, we saw Walt Disney. So, you know, it was like I really wanted my Prince Charming to come and prefer me, pick me, see me, so I wouldn't be invisible, and give me a role, give me a purpose, let me be the mom, let me be the wife, let me have the family, let us be a family. And I had that loving, you know, relationship that I would see depicted on television. That was
exactly
really
I think we all want to have our prince come and rescue us.
Yes.
I mean, I used to fantasize all the time about finding, you know, my Prince Charming, someone who would love me for me and someone who would rescue me, overlook all of my weaknesses, or I wasn't the prettiest kid on the block, or, you know, the thinnest person back then. You know, I had flaws, but, you know, there would be somebody out there to love me, and that's all I wanted.
I think a lot of us
in that generation of that, you know, fairy tale, Cinderella kind of, you know, where they emphasize that so much. Would you say so?
Yeah, I thought that would cure my loneliness.
Mm-hmm.
To finally have somebody pick me, you know, would cure my loneliness. So that was what I wanted. I put all that responsibility on marriage.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't so much whether he was the right guy. It was the fact that he wanted to marry me.
Uh-huh.
That trumped all my intuition. It trumped everything. That he was a church boy, and he wanted to marry me.
Exactly.
You know? So
you got married. Was it a big wedding?
Say what now? Sorry.
Was it a big wedding?
Oh yes. Oh yes. Big wedding.
Mm-hmm.
Big wedding. Little Cinderella dress. You know, I think I had maybe 5 bridesmaids. It was quite an event.
Mm-hmm.
It was quite an event. You know, when
did things start going downhill?
Well, honestly, I would say in hindsight, things were going downhill before we even got married. I just was too naive to see the signs.
Mm-hmm.
Because he wasn't affectionate.
Mm-hmm.
And when I would complain about it, he would use the Bible on me. You know, he would say things like, you know, here I am, you know, I love you for more than just your body, and here you are. That's all you want me to do is touch you or whatever. And I care about you, and I love you more than that. And please understand, I find you attractive, but gee, Suzette, I mean, really? I mean, you mean to tell me you're going to walk away from me and I love you just because I won't touch you or, you know, kiss you or tongue you or do all these other kind of things with you?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, coming from the background that I came from, I felt guilty, and I'd go to church and I'd get on the altar and ask God to please forgive me and help me to live right, and here I am. He wants to treat me right, and here I am wanting to kiss and hug, and it lead to the dark side, and, you know, and fornication is wrong, and here I am being such a worldly thinking woman. Lord, please help me to appreciate this man that you've sent me. And so, you know, it's interesting that I did not know how to trust my intuition. I didn't know how to trust it. I got talked out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got talked out of it. So,
did you talk to your family during that time?
I did, but I talking to my mom about sex, talking to my dad, oh, God, no. My environment was basically the church. We didn't talk about sex. We talked about, you know, most of the time, I did ask questions because I started getting a little nervous.
Mm-hmm.
And people that I asked, they would say, baby, you know what, just pray. Just pray, baby, just pray. Or
mm-hmm.
another lady told me, you know, you know what, you're not going to know, you don't know a man. You don't know who a man is until you marry him anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I asked him, I said, listen, I said, please give me some advice. Please tell me. I've never been married before. I'm getting nervous. Is there anything I need to know? Well, baby, no, just pray. Or, baby, you're not going to know who a man is until you marry him. You know, so I really did not get a lot of information. Now, there was one friend that did try to tell me about him. But
mm-hmm.
the interesting thing about the whole situation was, by the time the friend tried to tell me something about him, my ex had already told me everything.
Mm-hmm.
Already told me that when he was younger, he was raped by a man, that his
mm-hmm.
mother used to let keep him, and that he did kind of dabble in that life for a while. But here was the clincher. But you know what? I gave my heart to the Lord, and I got saved, and he delivered me. And me believing that God could do anything, I'm thinking, well, great. You know, why should he be ostracized for his past when God has forgiven him? And then the next thing, and I'm a man, Suzette, and I'm in love with you, and I want you. I want you. I want to be a husband to you. So, you know, I'm like, gee.
You know what? I'm going to tell you something.
That's sad.
If I was in your position, I would have felt the same exact way.
Well, I appreciate you telling me that because, you know what, that blesses me because in all this time, I've never heard anybody say that to me.
I'm going to speak on behalf of thousands and thousands of women that I've spoken to, and they would tell you the same thing. Wouldn't you say so, Misty?
I'm sitting here listening to her story, and you know, I know I've heard portions of it before when you were on before, Suzette, and you know, just closing my eyes, listening to the story, you just described my story. You know, there's so many things that are so similar. You know, me too, being from the South, growing up in a Christian-based home, and just how you described how he would use religion, and he loved you more than that. I mean, I identify with everything that you're saying. I mean, it's unbelievable to me. You know, I always hear this, and I always say this to other women I work with, how much our stories are alike. But just, I mean, really, I've just sit here, close my eyes, and listen. And in doing so, I'm just so grateful for where I am today.
Mm-hmm.
I am so grateful for where I am today. And I can hear it in your voice as well, you know, of where we are today versus where we were. It's just unbelievable.
You shouldn't feel at all that, you know, you were stupid or naive. Trust me, so many women are in the same exact position.
Exactly.
You know, you have to understand how much you had going against you. First
mm-hmm.
of all, you came from the South, from a very church-oriented family, where you weren't allowed to discuss anything. You just had to accept it. And how would you know any differently? If anything, you would feel that there's something wrong with you, not that there's something wrong with him.
Exactly.
Correct?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. That is
yeah,
exactly.
So I never, ever want you to look back at that time and say, how could I have been so stupid? Because we're all in the same boat.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
just even if we know what our husbands did in the past, we think, well, they tried it, they didn't like it, that's not who they are. I mean, I felt that way.
Exactly.
I knew something was in my husband's past, but, you know, I figured he tried something. He's, you know, whatever it was. He loved me, and he's straight. I mean, that's how, what else would we think? We didn't know.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So never feel bad about that.
Oh, thank you. Because I felt like I had made my peace with it until you said what you said, and it hit me. Nobody had ever said that to me. throughout my whole journey, throughout all that has happened to bring me to this place of wholeness, no one had ever said to me, if I were in your shoes, I would have done the same thing. I can understand that.
I was in your shoes. I was in better shape than you, and I still did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I had a lot more going for me than you had going for you. I mean, I didn't grow up in a Christian environment. I grew up in, you know, a very modern environment, and I still didn't know. So how could you possibly know?
And I, you know, speaking for most of the women I've ever worked with, they would
mm-hmm.
say the exact same thing. And
mm-hmm.
not would say, many of them have said the exact same thing to me. You know, it's, yeah. And you know what I think sometimes, and this is just my take on it, sometimes, like prior to marriage, when a straight wife does get an admission, I think that this could not be true for all cases. And some of the women I've worked with, it's like almost the woman has backed off and picked up on something through intuition or through friends. And I think sometimes the to-be husband senses that, and then they use it and sometimes tell their wives. And I truly believe some of them think that they are going to try to be straight from now on or whatever. But I think they do that to try to get to a different level of trust.
Mm-hmm.
And but they turn it around on them. You understand? It's hard to put it in words, but it's just like, okay, well, I'm going to lay down all my cards. Here's all my cards, and I'm showing you exactly what I am, who I am, and I'm giving you a choice. But I tried it. I didn't like it, and I love you so much more.
And you know, what?
Yeah.
I really bet you that, like what Misty's saying, in my heart, I really believe your husband really believed that, that if he could love you, then those feelings would go away. And, you know, these guys think we can fix them. They think that by loving us, it's going to fix them. And they don't even understand it. How are we supposed to understand
it?
Right. So never feel, never second guess yourself that you made this.
Absolutely not. We won't allow you to do that.
Well, I sure appreciate it.
All right. So if I recall correctly, you finally split up with him. And
there's
another thing that our women do all the time. They give him a second chance, correct?
Oh, my God, I did. I married him a second time. Yes, I did. And I've done a lot of thinking about the reasons why that I did. And I think for me, like I said, I was not taught to honor my intuition. And so
mm-hmm.
if you couldn't see it or prove it, you could be talked out of it. And so when he came back into my life, I had made another life decision that was traumatic, and it seemed like nobody really was on my side. And because we have a son together, he was in the background because he'd come and, you know, see our son. And he
mm-hmm.
picked up on that feeling of isolation and trauma that I was going through, and found his way back into my life. And this time, however, he came differently. This time, he was more open. He was more caring. He wasn't trying to, you know, use the Bible to keep me in line. He was a loving father to our son. And then he even said to me, he said, you know, Suzette, he said, when I let you go, that was one of the worst things I ever did, and I promised God that if he ever gave me another chance with you, that I would not blow it.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing about it was I had not, when we divorced, I did not date anybody else. I was so relieved, to be honest with you, to be
mm-hmm.
out of all that drama. You know, both the drama that you can see and the drama that you couldn't see.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause, you know, it's always a chaotic. There's always some kind of chaotic offness.
Right.
You're married to a person that's gay or it's closeted. You know, you might not be able to point out that they're gay, but God knows there's something about your life that's constantly in turmoil, in
mm-hmm.
some type of turmoil, some type of disarray, some type of imbalance. And So when he came back, because I never caught him with anybody, it was like it was easy for me to say, well, you know, maybe he's got, maybe whatever was going on with him, he's resolved it, because he had convinced me that it was more of an emotional attachment, that he had not actually acted on his feelings and he didn't want to be with another man. It was just a little bit of emotional residue that he dealt with from time to time. It's basically the way he described it. So I'm thinking, you know, emotional. I mean, he didn't do anything. It's emotional, and he seems to be really into me, because it's almost like the second time around, he was like a sexual, he was very sexual.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and that was not the way he was the first time around. You know, this time, you know, he was really, you know, giving it to his sister. So it was like, this is different. Maybe God has done something for this man. Because,
exactly.
I mean, it was like he wasn't backing away from me. He reached out to me. He pulled me close to him. We had sex all the time. But you know what? I've learned something else now that I'm 51. He couldn't keep it up. And, it's almost like even though we were having sex a lot, I do remember he would always lose his erection.
Mm-hmm.
He would always lose his erection. And when he did, he claimed, which was a very viable, at least in to my thinking, it was a very good reason. He was having symptoms of, they liken it to multiple sclerosis, but it was some a different kind of, it was some kind of spinal degenerative disease that got misdiagnosed, and we were just kind of coming into understanding what was happening to him. So he had something, sad to say this, but he had something to pin it on. It was his health. It was, you know, something's going on with my body. I don't know what's going on. And so, you know, I didn't think, well, he's losing his erection because he's not attracted to women. I was thinking he's losing his erection because he has something happening in his body that's affecting his blood flow.
And it sounds logical, right?
Yeah, very, because even now, sadly, to this day, his disease, because this was many years ago, now we're looking at, what, about 10, almost 15, maybe 16, 17 years later, he's an amputee. He has no legs, he's still struggling. What he's struggling with has atrophied his muscles and his nerves. He can't feel and so forth. So it's not MS, but it certainly is a close, it has many of the same symptoms. So, you know, it was like that whatever he did, there was some plausible, rational truth to it.
Mm-hmm.
The motives, though, were to get me off the trail.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying. So, he was like that in the beginning. But you know what's the weirdest thing? As soon as we said I do, and I am not lying, as soon as we said I do, something inside of me said, "Oh my God, what have I done?"
Yeah.
As soon as, because it was like when it was during the time where you had the toast. For the wedding, we, you know, the best man was supposed to toast us, and it wasn't what he said. It was just something in what he said. The best man was somewhere else. I think he was signing the wedding license, and somebody else was saying, "Well, let somebody else do the toast." And the way he said, "No, I don't want them to do the toast. I want this other person to do the toast." It was just something in the way he said it. That something in my heart, in my spirit, in that knowing place, knew, oh, God, I just married this guy and listened to him. It was something, it was an arrogance. It was something in the sound of his voice that in that moment, and I didn't say it to anybody else, but in my heart, I knew I had made a mistake. I knew I had. But then my pride kicked in. It was like, how can I do this a second time? that maybe you're wrong, you know, give it some time. He's just excited. This is the wedding. La-di-dee, la-di-da. After all, you know, he's been very sexual with you. You know, he's been this with you. So, you know, you might be wrong. You might be wrong. But, baby, I was not wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I was not wrong. And I'll admit, I was just, I didn't want to. And it was a pride. It was ego. I didn't want to say I failed a second time. So,
how long did you stay together the second time?
I'd say about five and a half years.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps that long, because it was a slower walk back down to the same thing. We ended up in the same place. It was just a little bit slower, and the circumstances were different because this time, he became the major breadwinner. So my whole economy was tied into him, which makes it a little, you know, you think a little bit harder before you make any moves when your economy is tied into somebody.
Mm-hmm, that's true. Mm-hmm.
You know, and then my second thing was, oh, God, my son. My son
mm-hmm.
adores his father. I cannot do this to him again. I cannot, you know, break up the family, so to speak, and have my son go through that kind of pain a second time.
Mm-hmm.
We're the ones that said, oh, God brought us back around again, baby. God heard your prayers. You wanted your mom and daddy to be back together again. God heard your prayers.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you do that? How do you tell your child something like that without giving everything you got?
Exactly. It has to be very difficult.
It was.
Was your son very upset when you split up?
No, this is the grace part. This is the grace part. The second time we got married, my son was older.
Mm-hmm.
So he started being able to sense things and see things. Not sensing or seeing the gay issue, but sensing and seeing the character behind the gay issues. Because you know what? I have come to the conclusion, it wasn't the issue that my husband was gay.
Uh-huh.
The issue was my husband was not a good person.
Right.
He had some character defects that just happened, him being gay just happened to be who he was.
Uh-huh.
But he would have divorced anyway because of the person that he was.
I can certainly uh-huh. identify with that, Suzette. I mean, for years I've said it, you know, sometimes, you know, with my ex-husband, being gay was the least of the issue we had going on at the time, and I still stayed with it, you know. It's so interesting how we get so wrapped up into so much complication, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so...
Yeah, he really mm-hmm. came from a family unit of very... manipulative, opportunistic
mm-hmm.
People, you know, forgeries and fraud and extortion. So he did that in the marriage. That's, I think, probably why there was a lot of drama all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you're playing people and it's catching up with you, and you're constantly... lying to cover the last lie.
I think a lot of times a lot of these guys really exhibit sociopathic behavior, you know, to cover up things that, you know, they live a lie, and every day is another lie they have to keep caught up with. And in time, it just is a matter that they lie about a lot of things, and even when there's nothing to lie about, and a lot of times they like to create chaos and confusion to really divert somebody away from, you know, really recognizing the truth.
Yeah, because I
find a lot of them live in very chaotic lives.
Oh, yes, I was always under stress. I felt like I was always given a project. There was always some project that I had to manage. There was always something happening in the home. And then you add to that his health issues that were deteriorating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know it's tough for women just so to be married to a gay man, but to be married to a gay man with a debilitating illness, and now you're married to a gay man and you're a caregiver.
Right.
That you know, that adds even more pressure. But my son did see some things himself, and I had been praying about it, and I said, you know, God, I can't deal with this. I can't. And if the only thing that's keeping me here is my son, I just can't hurt him again. But you're going to have to help me, because if I have to stay here for my son, I'm going to need some help.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the day that my son came in, I was upstairs, and he looked at me. He said, Mama, you're not happy, are you? And it caught me completely off guard.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, honestly, baby, no, I'm not. He said, you're not happy with Dad, are you?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no, sweetheart, I'm not. He said, Mom, if you're trying to stay in this marriage for me, don't do it for me. He said, whatever you choose to do, you have my blessing as long as I can go with you.
Mm-hmm.
And that freed me. That freed me, and it was at that point that I said, thank you, God, I can leave them.
Well, thank God is right.
That was the second time, and I knew then that I could leave. And my son was okay, because he did confide that when I left him the first time, he resented me for it. He was harboring resentment in the beginning, and he thought it was my fault. He said, I told him, I said, I regret it. My only regret was marrying his dad a second time. And he said, Mama, please don't regret it. He said, if for no other reason, it allowed me to see Dad for who he was. He said, so that I wouldn't blame you for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, everything has a purpose, everything. And to be honest with you, it took me going back into that hellhole that my son could reclaim a sense of peace and not carry a hidden resentment that would have eaten away at his soul, then it was worth it.
Now, after your marriage split up, how old were you at that point, the second time?
Oh, gosh. It was in 1999.
Okay, so it's a while. And after your marriage ended, did you feel like running right out there and finding somebody else?
The second time?
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. First time, no. First time, I was so relieved to be out of it. But the second time, it was different. The second time, it was like I felt such humiliation. I felt so upset, like I had been fooled two times. I felt I had to fight so hard to get out of it. My economy was tied into him. It was just so much harder. I had to fight for custody. I had to fight for everything. We had to go to court. It just got really nasty in a way that the first time didn't.
Uh-huh.
So I was exhausted. I was depleted. But the interesting thing, Bonnie, I got so horny. I'm gonna be honest with you. I'm just gonna put it up. It came like suddenly.
Uh-huh.
There was this point in my life where I just became overwhelmed with this hunger.
Mm-hmm.
It was like when I added both those times of marriage together, I could count on my hand how many times me and my husband had been intimate.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I don't know, all that mixed together, all of a sudden this came, this insatiable desire to have sex. It was almost like I've been holding out the good wife, whatever. I've never cheated on my husband. I've gone through the humiliation of sitting on the corner of the bed begging this man to please touch me, not be so cold. It was almost like after all of that, something in my brain switched. And it was like this overwhelming horniness, this overwhelming, like, thirst, this hunger for sexual attention overtook me.
Mm-hmm.
It It really did. And I prayed so hard, still being the church girl, I prayed so hard, God, please, 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 please help me. And, you know, I'm horny. You got to help me. You got to help me because I'll probably jump the next thing coming. You got to help. But the amazing thing was God didn't stop it from happening, but I do believe he kept me from being preyed upon. I do believe that. Because the guy that I ended up getting together with ended up being, I mean, had a reputation for being a womanizer. But the interesting thing about it is he never hurt me. And for the next 3 years off and on, he gave me all the sex my little body could hold.
Oh, well, that was good.
You know, ended up later on, it's almost like when you come out of your fog and you heal, because that was a transition. That was definitely a transition relationship. Now, of course, when the smoke cleared, I realized that there was no future there. It was just really purely, you know, a sexual attention thing. But during that time of my life, I needed that.
And I always tell women, it's fine to practice, practice, practice until your soulmate comes along.
Well, I sure dig this girl got a lot of practice.
That's very good. Really? I think women need to practice and feel reaffirmed that, you know, they're women. I just tell them not to get into emotional relationships for that first year. But that doesn't mean you can't go out there and have some great sex. You know, to make
and I think I needed it. I needed to feel attractive. I needed to feel like I still had it. I needed, you know, you come out of it so drained.
Mm-hmm.
You come out of it feeling so old. I don't know if anybody else felt that way, but I felt so old. Like something.
Every woman feels differently. I know I reverted back into no sex for many years afterwards, you know, because I was so, you know, I think beaten down emotionally that I had no confidence in myself. So, you know, I kind of turned off my sexuality for 11 years. But then after that point, you know, boom, my heart opened up and I wanted it again. So I think that all women go through different periods and phases. Some, when they come out of the marriage, you know, they've been in there a long time and they haven't had sex. So now that's something that they really are desperately looking for. And not so much the sex, maybe you'll agree with this, but also with the intimacy, you know, the passion that comes with it. Because even if you had sex with your husband, you can tell it's very different with a straight man than it is a gay man, right?
It really is, and that was the interesting thing, because the issue with me and my husband was it wasn't that a lot, you know, some people think that when you have sex with a gay man, it's boring, it's dull, it's puritanistic, it's missionary position. But to be completely honest, it was exciting. He didn't have the issues. It's almost like there were things that he was willing to do.
The first time
that
around?
Some men weren't willing to do.
On the first time around, was he willing, or just the second time?
The rare time that we did have sex, it would always be good, and it would always leave me wanting more. But this was the thing that was difficult about our relationship, was we'd have sex, but it was almost like once I had sex with him, and it was so good, it was like it was very passionate and everything, but as I look back in hindsight, I think it was two things. One, it took so much of that energy just for him to touch me, and it came across as passion, but it was actually, it took all that, it took almost like a running start just to get himself worked up to do it.
Mm.
And the second part of it was, once it was done, there was no residual. It was like, bam, no cuddling, no loving looks, no bonding. It was like, here I am feeling more bonded to him, and he was almost like, okay, I've given you what you want now, so don't bother me no more for one or two more years.
Right.
So that was the torture, to have it so good and to want it.
And then
he
feel
won't
so disconnected, right?
Yeah, and he won't give it to you. And then once he does, it's instant disconnect.
Exactly.
Instant disconnect. So I spent so much of my marriage wondering, Is he going to ever touch me again? God, I wish he would touch me again. Please, please touch me again. Please, please, please. Then when he finally does it, I'm just like swinging from the light fixture. But then as soon as it's over, I'm crying inside because I'm like, oh, God, I'm not going to have this again. I might not ever have this again. It might be a year. It might be 2 years if he's going to ever touch me again. It's gone. You know, that dread, that immediate dread that it's not going to happen.
Suzette, would you agree at this point in time, you know, having experienced a lot of, you know, different situations at this point, that with straight men, they want sex?
Yes.
I mean, you don't have to beg a straight man.
You don't have, you might have to beg him to stop. Let you get some sleep. It's like, baby, please. But you know, a man, a straight man who is attracted to you has no problems touching you and being with you. They want to. And that was one of the things that for me was really, really telling. It was almost like, it wasn't just sex, Bonnie. It was, if I even made a move as if I was going to touch my husband, if I even made a move that he maybe misconstrued and thought I was going to even try to kiss him, he would shudder as if he was afraid or as if he was caught off guard. Like if he wasn't prepared, he would jump at any affection. If I would sit beside him on the sofa and I started moving close to him, I would sense his body getting rigid, like it was uncomfortable for him. And I've since found with the man that I'm with now, it's like I can't surprise him. It's like, you know, it's like if I touch him, he doesn't draw up. And I didn't realize the difference. To me, that was the biggest difference beyond them wanting to have sex. It was the affection part. I never feel like I have to say, okay, honey, I'm getting ready to kiss you, and I don't want to just peck you on the lips. I want some tongue this time. You know, I didn't feel like I had to kind of give him a time to prepare. I can just be affectionate. I don't have to censor it. I don't have to, you know, I can just lay on him, and he's right. He lets me do it. There is no shuddering. There is no backing off. There is no invasion of his space. He welcomes it.
I know. That's why I tell women, you just don't understand what the real difference is, even if they can perform with you, a gay man. You know, it's like something they have to do. It's something that, you know, just to keep up the semblance of being married. It's not a preference. They're just doing it like they're doing you the biggest favor of your life. And that's not to say they can't do it every so often, but it's always, you never quite feel like it was ever for the right reason, or there must have been some other kind of ulterior motive. But with a straight man, it's just so totally different. And I tell women, you know, I just turned 60, and, you know, I'm 80 pounds overweight at least, and my boyfriend couldn't care less. He loves touching me, and he says more of me to love for him. You know, that's what a straight man, the difference is. They don't look at those things. And,
yes,
you know, he's 11 years older than I am. So it's a matter that, you know, age isn't even the issue. We still have a wonderful, you know, life of passion and romance, even at this stage of the game. And, you know, so it's clear that you've met somebody now, right?
Yes. Oh, he is yummy, yummy, yummy. Oh, my God. We are almost at 8 months, and I tell you, and this is no lie, every time I get together with him, I feel giddy. I feel youthful. It's like the first time, every time we're together, it's like we're going on that first exhilarating date again. It's beyond what I could have comprehended or dreamed for myself. I'm just gonna, I tell you, it's just the truth. It's just, I didn't think, you know, you kind of, after you go through so much in life, you almost are afraid to dream. It's like, yeah, I want a straight man, but you know, this Prince Charming ideal, you know, that was for little kids, that was for when I was a young girl. But I'm going to tell y'all the truth. This man is better than anything I could have dreamed.
Isn't that wonderful?
That's wonderful.
It's wonderful. I'm humble. I almost don't want to talk too much about it because I would start crying because this is much more than what I ever expected to happen to me. The most I thought was, okay, at least if I can get somebody who will love me for me. But it's not just loving me for me. It's that he just seems to just adore me. You know what I mean? In a way that I always wanted somebody to see me.
Uh-huh.
I feel like he sees me and he's saying, yeah, just what I like. That you just like you are. You don't have to change not one thing. I don't have to be less sexy. I don't have to be anything. I can initiate. I can enjoy sex without anybody quoting a bunch of scriptures to me or making me feel like I'm acting like a hoe or something. I can be free with him and he welcomes it. I can be a strong woman, but I can also be vulnerable. And it doesn't make him, it doesn't turn him off. It makes him press in. And I see a relationship coach, and one of the things we were talking about, I said, he doesn't seem to require much. She said, well, no. She says, he requires of himself to love you well.
Listen, Suzette, do you mind reading a little bit from your blog about your boyfriend? Is it okay if I read some of this?
Sure you can. Sure.
Yeah, I'd like our readers to hear this because Suzette has this beautiful blog, and we're going to tell people how they can, you know, get to your blog. And if they can't get it down, they can write to me, and I'll send them the link. But, and by the way, I love your hair. I see that beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
I want that hair. But anyway, all right, well, it'll look kind of cute on me. It's called, Is Your Energy Holding You Back from Love? And Suzette wrote this actually on my birthday, September 26, 2011. And she wrote, can you believe this was the subject of one of the emails in my mailbox? I was in the process of deleting some Brand X ones, cluttering my inbox, but this one caught my attention. Dear friend, have you ever wondered if your energy was holding you back from attracting love? According to our friend, energy expert Christy Sheldon, your vibrations influence the quality of people and relationships you attract into your life. As I read more, I became aware that this Christy person was far more of a spiritualist who does energy work. It had that kind of psychic vibe to it. Not quite the direction I wanted to explore, but I couldn't deny the gravity of that question. I'm currently in a relationship. What's different about the Suzette now versus the Suzette then? The one who was the poster child for attracting unavailable men. Let me ponder this for a sec. When I consider the energy I had right before my now boyfriend, one comes to mind almost immediately. I didn't leave it to chance. I know, most relationship books tell you to get busy, to fill your life with the things you enjoy and be about living. They tell you to focus on yourself, and by doing so, you'll attract Mr. Right. Well, that may work for some folks, but I did all those things, but it still didn't stop the ache in my heart. I listened to my heart. I stopped trying to avoid what whispered in my ear loudest when I came home to an empty apartment or after watching a love story or when laying in bed staring out into the darkness. I want a man in my life. Up until this point, I'd been trying to adopt a happy single woman lifestyle. My son was now in college. Now was the time to do all the things I couldn't do as a single parent. Jump-starting my life with www.meetup.com, I did some fun things and met some great people, but there was still this aching in my heart for a deeper, more intimate connection. I remember laying in bed after I finished grieving yet another false start to the tune of a 9-month relationship. I don't want to feel lonely and desperate again, my heart anguished. I knew what the statistics say about dating over 40. I was now 51. I also knew that things looked even more grim if you were an African-American woman in her 50s, but I still had to admit that I couldn't see myself growing old alone. I just couldn't go out like that. So I decided to stop trying. No more psyching myself up otherwise. No more rationalizing. No more trying to live up to the 21st century single woman ideal. The next thing I remember was doing was detoxing. I think that's a good way of putting it. I'm sure Christy would say that my energy pulse was low because I'd come out of a previous relationship. She'd probably be right. But in my mind at the time, I knew I had to work through some things, shed some baggage that was no longer serving a purpose in my life. I sought a therapist. It's not that I felt I had some mental issues, not at all. I just knew I had to focus on reclaiming my best self. I had to get the smell of relationships past out of my skin. I had hair trigger reaction to things grounded in what counselors call anger distortions. Anger distortions are an intense reactions over what we hear or perceive. I've often heard them referred to as triggers. I call mine landmines. Something hidden just underneath the ground. You're walking along, minding your own business, and then you unknowingly or unsuspectedly step on one. Kablam! Such was my emotional trigger. If I felt a man was condescending, if he told me he would do something and didn't, or if I felt he was playing me, kablam! That's, now here's the thing. It was merely a perception. I had to learn that. It was a mistrust created by some disappointment in my life that left a wound that never healed. With the help of a relationship coach, working through those anger distortions changed the way I saw things. It changed how I saw people, especially men, and it changed how I saw myself. Now that I had let go of some emotional weights, I knew I couldn't remain on the sidelines. I had to get back in the game. So I dusted off my little black book, a.k.a. my favorite online dating site. I updated my profile. Remembering Dr. Michelle Callahan's advice in her book, Ms. Typed, I predetermined that I was going to bring my real self to dating. Not the mistrusting shadow of me, but the happy, genuine me. Sidebar, I strongly recommend you read her book. It changed my approach for dating for the better. Finding Mr. Right wasn't immediate. I had to date a few might-bes, wannabes, and possiblys. In fact, I threw back my diamond. You see, I read that if a man didn't call you back within 48 hours of going out with you, he just wasn't into you. Well, my diamond didn't read that book. He read, if you don't give her space, she'll feel you're desperate and it'll turn her off. So you can imagine how that went. I chuckle when I think about it. Anyway, my point here is context. Most of us don't take relationship advice in context. And my next point, thank God, I had the good sense to admit to him that I made a mistake. Well, that's my energetic recount. It's not saying everyone is like me, so I won't assume that you aren't happy being single. If you aren't, though, is your energy holding you back from love? And I just love that post. What do you think, Misty?
Absolutely. I think it sounds to me like she took some very good steps and some steps that I hope I have also helped some women take. You know, set the intention. You have to be active to get out there into the dating world. And before you do that, I think you need to make yourself as whole as you can. So not only are you choosing well, you're giving, you're also putting your best into it. And I just think it makes all the difference in the world.
Yes, I agree.
Suzette, I'm just so impressed. I've shown that column to several of my friends who are in their 50s and having trouble with dating. And I said, you know, take a look at what this woman has to say because you're going to have to learn from her. But she's so happy now. And
mm-hmm.
I think a lot of times you get jaded and, you know, you give up too fast. And like you say, you have to just change your whole stance and how you're approaching it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are some wonderful men out there, as you and I
yes,
could just testify to, right?
That's some very, very good men out there. And the thing about it is, unless we work on ourselves, we don't know how to recognize it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we get impatient because it doesn't happen the way we think it should, or we think sometimes that now that we're, you know, out of that difficult, that bad relationship with our gay husbands, we think we're okay, but we got stuff underneath the surface that
mm-hmm.
won't come up until we get out there. You know, we can think we're okay, but mistrust issues and a lot of things come to the forefront when you start dating again, because you're dealing with men and you're dealing with personalities.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You're going to identify those triggers or landmines, as you call them.
Yeah.
Well,
I think
that you lose faith and confidence in your own judgment. And that's something that comes as a result of misjudging the whole marriage to start with. You know, and you had to do it twice. So you probably didn't have that kind of confidence, you know, when you went out there again. So I think So at least you took the time, you built yourself up, you know, and then you went out there and you went for the gold and you found it, right?
Yes, I did.
This is your soulmate that's out now? Is this your soulmate that you found? Are you going to be with this guy forever, you think?
I think he is definitely good long-term material.
Good. Well, nothing has to be forever.
I have it on good authority.
Well, that's good. Well, he should be totally crazy about you, and if he doesn't treat you right, you tell him you have a cousin in Philadelphia who's going to take care of it.
I will, but I tell you what, he is knocking the ball out of the park, I'm telling you. It's just amazing to see it and to sense that it's genuine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not that feeling of if it's too good to be true, it normally is. Nothing like that, but just a genuine person, a willing spirit, and an open spirit.
Isn't that wonderful? You tell him you have to take a ride up to Philadelphia for a weekend, Suzette.
I'm going to have to get there.
Huh? You can get here. My sister drives down there a lot.
Oh, really? We're going to have to hook up.
Yeah, it's not that far away. You can tell him you want to spend a nice long weekend. It's a little long of a drive, but you'll come up here and tell him your cousin has to meet him so I can check him out for you.
Oh, you know what? He probably would love coming to Philadelphia.
Fine. You tell him I'll buy the cheesesteaks, and I'll check him out and make sure he's good enough for you.
That sounds good.
But, Suzette, can we tell people how to give them the blog address where they can read your blog?
It is www.50, and then you spell out timesawriter.blogspot.com.
Right, and if you have trouble getting that down, just write to me at bonk@AOL, you know, my email address, and I will send you a direct link to the blog. But also now, I'm so excited because you're moving up in the world from your blog, right? You've been asked to write for another publication?
Yes. I got a publication on an online site called Divorce Dating.
Be a guest writer, correct?
No, I didn't get the best writer for that one. When it comes to e-zine article, I'm on the expert platinum author status on that.
Okay, good.
Which is pretty good, you know.
Oh, I think it's very impressive. But I just love reading what you write because you have such a beautiful style.
And I
hope you don't mind. I'm going to link myself in as one of your friends so I can get every time you're writing something.
I don't mind it at all.
Yeah, and if you want to read Suzette's, I mean, it's always heartwarming to read what she has to say and her honesty, and you can see her pictures on there. So, you know, feel free to go there, and if you didn't get the, you know, the blog site address, just write to me, and I'll send you the link. So, Suzette, I can't thank you enough. We always feel good when people hear your story, and, you know, we'll be back in touch with you. I hope you don't mind in a few months to do an update on how your relationship is going.
I don't mind at all. I would love to.
And I really appreciate you being on our show also for our sisters who are African-American who many times feel like they're out there floundering on their own. And there are this issue certainly affects the African-American community, you know, in a very large way, even though it may not be as much out there as an issue as, you know, because of the, I guess, the stigma of, you know, how it is where they consider men on the down low, you know, that there are so many other kind of social stigmas attached to it. But it certainly happens just as prevalently, if not more so there than I think in any other community. Wouldn't you say so?
I would definitely say so. I remember there used to be a day they'd say if you wanted to find a good man, go to church. Now it's getting to the point where it's almost like, oh, Lord, I don't know if you should go to the church to find a good man, because it's like the you have to question whether the choir director
is right.
Straight or gay. So, you know, it's almost like you almost have to kind of, that what we used to believe, you're having to rethink that thing.
It's so funny because, you know, in our new book, Straight Wise, Shattered Lives, Volume 2, which is now available on Amazon through either a hard, you know, regular book or through Kindle. And last week we had our friend Wendy on. Was it last week, Misty? No, 2 weeks ago. Wendy was on. And Wendy's husband was, you know, church choir director. But it's amazing how many women we have whose husbands are choir leaders in a church. It's just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that has to be number one red flag. If you meet a man who is a choir director in a church, go the other way.
Yeah. Several of the women are tied into the ministry.
And the second one that they're marrying are the youth ministers. That's another red flag.
Yes, 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 yes.
And the third one are the ones who are in church and who don't believe in having sex before you get married. That's another red flag, wouldn't you say?
I can attest to that.
Yes, it is. The thing that's so funny, not funny, but strange about that is a lot of times they will attest, they will say that you should not have sex before marriage, but sometimes they're the very ones that are saying, oh, God, I tell you, I'm trying to live right, and they're the ones sweating you ultimately to have sex, and then once you have sex with them, then they treat you like it was your fault.
I thought they're the ones that tell you that you shouldn't be having sex before marriage, but they forget to tell you that they're not going to have sex with you after it either.
You know, you made a good point. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
That's true.
So I think that any good church-going man is going to have sex with you, regardless of what the church says, if he's straight. But I think if he doesn't, there's something definitely wrong. So, yeah, I think you got to stay away sometimes from these church guys, for sure. That doesn't mean you can't marry as a Christian man, but the ones that are that involved in the church, sometimes they have their own agendas. Wouldn't you say so, Misty?
I just say be so careful, because some of the women I work with, like with you as well, Bonnie, have some of their husbands have really strong ties with the church. I'm not saying you don't have to find someone that doesn't believe in God or the church you're in, but just be careful, because it can be a red flag. You know, you've got to, and one thing that Suzette mentioned, and I bet she trusted the second time around better, was her intuition. I heard her say the word intuition a little bit. You know, I think as we get older, we women decide to trust our intuition a little more. You know, listen to your intuition. It's going to give you the red flags. Listen to it. Share it with a friend. You know, talk it through. And sometimes, you know, finding someone in church is not the right place. And I hate that I'm even saying that, but it can be true. Mm-hmm. Just find someone that has similar beliefs, and then maybe you can find a church together or whatever. Because, you know, for many people, that's very important, is their church life. And I understand that. I honor that. But you gotta be careful.
Because I know this time around when I was looking for someone, my prayer was, God, I'm not asking you to send me a religious person. I'm not asking you to send me a church-going person. But I am asking you to send me someone who's spiritual, who has a consciousness, who has a desire to do what's right. And I started wanting to look for character first. And I think that's the big thing, because I had to train myself not to get so caught up on the normal attraction, Because like I said, 90% of the time, if I was like gone on that person, like they were like slap me silly, attractive, 9 times out of 10, they were unavailable. So I had to kind of retrain myself to start not getting my head turned by the physicality of that person, but to wait and let them expose themselves to me and let their heart become what attracts me to them. Person they are. And so my thing is, whether that person is a churchgoer or not, the main thing to look at is this person a kind person? Is this person a loving person? Does this person have capacity? Can you talk to this man without feeling judged or without feeling dismissed or disregarded? Does he, is he affectionate? Is he comfortable in his own skin? Is he comfortable with affection?
That's a huge one.
Because you got some church people that, you know, almost like you touch them and you touch them and they're scared. Oh, you know, we can't have sex. And it's like, you mean to tell me I can't touch you without you automatically going to sex? That's, to me, that's a big flag right there. You know?
I think you're right.
And I know it sounds strange because we've had gay husbands, but that's why I had to go to a relationship coach, because it's like you learn the intent behind what the person is doing. You learn to look deeper. You learn to see more. And I knew for myself, I was naive. I needed somebody to teach me. I needed somebody to help me. So I had to put pride aside and say, you know what? Going to see a relationship coach is one of the best uses of my money I can think of right now.
Sounds like it. You don't have to convince me twice. Sounds like it.
And that's what we always tell our women, you know, take the time to get the, you know, help that you need. Need to go. And, you know, Misty is a relationship coach. You know, certainly the women that she's worked with have had extreme success in moving ahead. I think that, you know, maybe you could talk a little bit about that too, Suzette. You know, coaching is different than counseling, correct?
Yeah, you're talking to me. Absolutely.
Who's that?
You know, there's therapy and then there's coaching. Therapy a lot of times looks more into the past, people wanting root issues of things, to identify some things, and oftentimes it's things that you may want to dig in a little deeper. And oftentimes I believe that therapy should be done in person. Some therapists do it over the phone or via Skype, which, you know, that depending on what the situation is, it can work. But, you know, for most purposes, therapy is in person. And it really needs or should be someone in your community. And that's just a big difference, usually just digging a little deeper into things. Now, coaching, I believe, and this is my philosophy, is someone, a lot of the clients that I have coached, many of them have been through therapy before, worked on a lot of issues, or many of them have maybe not needed therapy before and doesn't really like the idea of what therapy sounds like and pretty much have a lot of their things together, their life together. But there's an area that they want a little bit of help in, or there is an area that they want to find solutions in. So coaching is very solution-oriented, if that makes sense. So it's a fine line, but there is a difference. So with coaching is basically it's about finding the person that's going to ask the right questions. And you've got to really be honest with yourself as a client to dig deep. And it's a lot of work on behalf of the client as well, because it's like, you know, think of a sports team, you know, except you're the only person on your team and your coach is your coach. They're guiding you. They don't tell you what to do, but they help you find the solutions. And they help you find the solutions by asking you the right questions, the good questions. And, you still dig deep with coaching, but it's not as much as what it would be clinical-based. And by that meaning, it's not as much as like dealing with someone, okay, you know, maybe I'm bipolar. I need to learn how to work on that. I have severe depression to where I'm suicidal. See, that's all therapy and clinical-based. Now, coaching is different. Suzette just gave a wonderful example. You know, hey, I'm out of a relationship. I've been divorced X amount of time. I'm looking to get into a relationship. So then, you know, you look for someone that specializes in that, a coach. That's a great
place to start, like a relationship coach. With myself, I've done a lot of what I call divorce coaching or divorce recovery. And that's someone that usually they've healed, they've gone through the worst of it, and then they contact me. And they basically what they want to do, they want to find their life again. And we start with the small things because this person's forgot who they are. They've lost themselves inside of the relationship. They're not diagnosed with anything from the DSM, which is a clinical book used for diagnosis, but they're trying to get through a really hard part of their life, and they've reached the point to where they wanted to rediscover who they are, and that's where a coach comes in well. So coaches are, they're becoming popular, and some coaches are really wonderful. Some coaches are not so wonderful. So I tell people, choose one from word of mouth, a friend that choose one, and just start searching and find one that you think that suits your needs. And I'm telling you, you can really move mountains when it comes to coaching. As Suzette, I think you've described that well. And I tell people, don't hesitate to get a professional involved. Really don't. You're worth every dime to get a professional involved.
Have you ever done many times to your coach?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
I was asking Suzette.
Oh.
Suzette,
what was that now?
Did you see your coach? How often did you go to your coach?
In the beginning, I was going to see her every week or every other week.
Uh-huh.
And now we just get together for maintenance, like once a month.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Fine-tuning, you know, like a little checkup, keeping me on the straight
mm-hmm.
and narrow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, bouncing things off of her as the relationship becomes deeper.
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest things that I think everybody at some point tackles is vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
And so the deeper the relationship gets, the more vulnerable. And a lot of times people have beliefs that if they're vulnerable, it makes them subject to being used, to being whatever. And I had to kind of deal with some of my little residual fears mm-hmm. of vulnerability. And so having a relationship coach to kind of bounce that off of was very, very helpful. Her ability to reframe and
mm-hmm.
be a mirror, to hold up a mirror and to remind me of what I said I wanted and
mm-hmm.
to remind me of my strengths and how I've done so well. You know, just a coach, somebody to come alongside
mm-hmm.
of you and say, look, I'm supporting you in this endeavor.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so come on, let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's just wonderful. I'm so glad things worked out for you. And as Misty and I always say, you know, we deserve it. You
mm-hmm.
know, and I really believe that. You have to tell yourself, this is something that I deserve. I deserve this happiness, and I deserve someone in my life who can, you know, enhance it. It's not like you have to have a man, but, you know, you want somebody who can share the best times with you. And someone who can enhance your life, you know, add to it, not take away from it. So
very, very true.
Hopefully this is the man. And you tell him that, you know, we're really happy that he found you, or you found him.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And you know, and even if he isn't, what a wonderful
experience.
Time, what a wonderful experience
mm-hmm.
to have. Because I feel like this, the more I have good relationships, the
mm-hmm.
more it increases the likelihood that I will continue to have good
mm-hmm.
relationships. And
yep,
they
exactly.
will get better and better because I'm continuing to learn, grow. So I'm like, you know what? Even if this doesn't last, and I hope it does, but even if it doesn't, I'm telling you what, I am having a ball right now.
Hmm.
And that's wonderful. And you know what? That's part of rebuilding yourself, having good experiences, having positive ones. And hopefully this will be the man in your life, but at least if it's not, you'll know that the real one will be coming along if this isn't the real one, and you'll know that there's good men out there, and you
mm-hmm.
can have a good relationship, right?
There are. We just have to know how to recognize them. They're out
mm-hmm.
there. They're out there.
Does he have a brother?
Yes.
Is he available?
Oh, no. His brother has a girlfriend.
All right, because I have a couple friends who I'm really looking for.
Oh, his brother's been in a relationship longer than
than we have. So.
Well, we don't know how long it's going to last. Keep them online for me. But anyway, Suzette, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight. You know, it was really uplifting. Wouldn't you say so, Misty?
Absolutely. The word that comes to mind is so inspiring to all the women out there listening. And thank you so much for the message you've given them, the hope you've given them. And
as always, Suzette, we hope to have you back here by the beginning of the year so you can start our year off with a bang.
Absolutely.
Will you mind doing that?
I wouldn't mind at all.
All right, sweetie. You know I love you.
I love you too, Bonnie. I've never laid eyes on you, but God knows I love you to pieces.
Ah, thank you. Same here. You're my sister in North Carolina. All right, I'll be talking to you soon. Thanks so much again.
Thank you. Thank you, Missy.
Right,
thank you, and love to you. Good night.
Good night.
Well, Miss, it's time for us to go. We had a beautiful show with Suzette here.
We did.
I always feel so good after I hear from her. And I'm going to send you the link to her blog. Oh, I did send you the link to her blog.
When you
read it, you're so uplifted. I mean, she's just such a talented writer.
And she's very talented. I could listen to her all night, you know, just tell her story. The heartache and the pain, but the end was so good, you know, because I think so many women can identify with her story. Her story is so similar to the rest of us. She's got a beautiful way with words to describe what she went through that I think so many of our women can identify with. But the beauty is, you know, she offered such a message of hope at the end, especially for our women that so many, you know, that are Christian and do fall into that trap. You know, she just described it so well. You know, we are prone to do that. So, you know, hold your head up high. And it'll be fine. It really will. You know, you can get through. You can get through it. I think the message she delivered so well. You can get through it.
Not only can you get through it, but there can be hope and beauty and love. You know, down the line.
Absolutely, it's got a good ending.
People get sick of hearing it about my life, so I like to have other women confirm that. But it's
absolutely
so true. Your soulmate's out there looking for you. You just have to find them.
Absolutely.
Well, words, Misty, I hope you have a wonderful week. I did want to mention that we have a couple of good guests that are going to be coming and joining us over the next couple of weeks, and I'll tell you a little bit about that before we hang up.
Okay.
Let me just grab my calendar because I think that we're actually going to have, for the next 2 weeks, believe it or not, we're going to have two different men joining us.
Great.
And that's unusual, 2 weeks in a row. But one is Joe Knudsen. Joe was a guest for us once before. And, I mean, he's a great guy. I just love hearing him talk. He was married and also full Christian background and thinking this is what he should do. And we had him on as guest before with several other men, but this is just going to be him as our guest. And so Joe will be here next week. And then the following week, we're going to have another friend of mine who's an author named Greg Allen, and he wrote a novel that just came out that's really excellent. It's a novel, so it's not a true story, but a lot of the images are based on, you know, people that he knows, and it's about a gay man who turns supposedly straight to get away from the gay life and who gets married, and, you know, he was a very famous guy, a model, and he was very, you know, much on the jet set. Got married when he couldn't take the gay life any longer and how that just deteriorated in time. So Greg Allen is the author's name, and he'll be talking about that story, and he is a gay man with a partner. So he'll talk a bit about, you know, his own experiences as well. So that's the next 2 weeks coming up, and then after that, we're going to have in November on the 6th, Dolly from our book, Straight Wise Shattered Lives, Part 2.
Wonderful.
Dolly once before, and she wrote her story, which is like Wendy's story. You know, these stories just draw you in and make you cry as you're reading them to see the mistreatment of some of our women had to go through. So Dolly will be with us November 6th, and once again, her story is in my newest book, Straight Wise Shattered Lives, Volume 2, that you can find, you know, on my website or else on Amazon.com. So, a lot of news coming up, right, Misty?
Lots of good stuff, and I can't believe we're approaching almost the end of another year. Wow.
I know. It's about time for you to have one of those holiday seminars coming up.
I know. I've got to get that together. I've had some requests for that. Those always are helpful for the women, you know. It doesn't matter how long you've been through this. It's really a great sense of support when you can be with other people through the holidays. It really is, because this is, you know, it's a grief-related issue, the divorce recovery process, and it helps knowing that there's others out there that understand you and know what you're going through. And the best part is you have a place to come to and don't feel so alone. So, yes, I've got to get that on the schedule.
Yeah, because during the holiday time, that's when women really go through,
absolutely,
you know, all those emotional triggers that remind you of what was, what should have been, what could have been, and what wasn't.
Yep.
So women get especially depressed during that time of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So Misty will put something together and maybe announce it for us by next week so you can get ready for it.
Yeah, I need to get that together, and I'll be posting it soon. That's
good.
Hard to believe this time of year has come around so quickly, you know?
Isn't it?
I know.
I know. I'm running behind on my news. I was supposed to have it out 2 days ago or yesterday, and won't get out till tomorrow. This time is just running away with us.
It is.
But anyway, Misty and I are going to say goodnight. Misty, it's been a great night.
It was
good. I feel good ending the night with, you know, just thinking about Suzette and all the hopeful words that she has for listeners, right?
A beautiful woman.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Inside of him. Beautiful woman.
So if any of you have any questions or any thoughts and you'd like to, you know, send them to me, bondk@aol.com. Or you can visit Misty's beautiful website. Give them the email address, or the website address, Misty.
It's mistyhall.com, MISTIHALL.com.
Yep, visit Misty's website. You can just look at it. It's very mesmerizing.
Thank you. I love it, too. Thank you.
Me, too. All right, so for tonight, we're going to say our good nights. Go ahead, Misty.
Good night and love to all.
And I say the same thing. Good night to all of our listeners. Have a good week, and we'll be back with you next Sunday night. Good night, Misty.
Good night.
Bye-bye.